Steve Tasker. Into the end zone. Touchdown. Touchdown.
And he's got it at the 10-yard line.
Touchdown. Touchdown. Touchdown, Buffalo. The Bills win it in overtime.
Coming up here. Welcome back to the show. We're coming here from the Detroit Marriott in Detroit, Michigan. Big Beaver Road in Detroit, Michigan. John Murphy, Steve Tasker with a special guest. Happy to have Michigan native. You're native of the state.
I am, yeah.
Mike Bodish, born and raised in
Michigan. Thank you, Steph. Good to see you, buddy.
Good to see you, bro. How'd you get out to UCLA?
Excuse me. Well, that's a funny story because when I got recruited in the late 80s, you were allowed 5 trips. So I took up to Michigan and UCLA and Michigan State. And I wanted to go out to Boston to go check out Boston College in North Carolina, Chapel Hill, but I knew I wasn't going there. I just wanted a free trip. It was UCLA or Michigan, and I was a native of Michigan. And, you know, my coach was a Spartan fan, and the Spartans weren't that good under George Perlis at that time.
Yeah.
And my dad played at Notre Dame, and I didn't even go to Notre Dame. You know, Jerry Fouts was there, and it was kind of a bad deal. But long story short, I ended up going out to UCLA because we had a little bit of a setback at the house. And, you know, my parents got divorced, and I thought, you know, I'm going to go into Michigan, going to play for Bo, get, you know, have to get my schooling done and be half hour away from there. You know, I don't know. Maybe I should go to UCLA. They won 2 Rose Bowls and a Fiesta Bowl the 3 years before. And then so I said, you know, I decommitted from Bo, and I went to UCLA.
Was it tough to say no to Bo Schembechler?
It was extremely tough. He was a very, very dedicated guy, and at that time Gary Moeller was the guy recruiting me.
Oh wow.
And you know, when I decommitted, Bo came up there 2 or 3 times, and I'll never forget this. He sat in my dad's chair, go figure, right?
Yeah.
And those little Louisville Slugger bats back in the day, you know, he had one next to the for some reason we had one there, and he just put it in his hand. He started hitting his palm like, you're a Michigan guy, you're never gonna play out there, you need to come here. You know, this is, you know, for the lack of a better term, you can imagine the cuss words he would have said. But
he gave me the hard sell.
But at the end of the day, I just, at 17 years old, I just said, I'm going to UCLA. So I wanted to play in the Rose Bowl game, and back then there was no BCS. It was the winner of the Pac-10 versus the Big Ten.
It was the right move?
It was, and I hate to say this to all my Buffalo Bills fans, but my D-line coach, Greg Robinson, at UCLA, went to the Jets the same time I came to Buffalo with you, and they tried to trade for me there, and thank God they didn't, because I didn't want to be coached by him anymore at that time because I just had him for 5 years. And then long story short, he ended up being the D coordinator at the Broncos, and I took a trip to Tampa and the Broncos and the Lions, and I chose the Broncos, and we won 2 Super Bowls.
Who was your head coach at UCLA?
Terry Donahue.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. Terry Donahue was a longtime legendary coach, Pac-10 coach. Now it's Pac-12. But
wow, these are bringing back some names
today.
Wow.
We're old now.
Yeah, I know, right?
Mike Lotish played with the Bills, won a couple of Super Bowls with Denver. He joins us here. You live not far away in Birmingham? Is that where you live?
I do. I live about 10 minutes away, and you know, it's ironic that you guys came to stay in Troy. I thought for sure you guys would be downtown to get away from all this construction out here in Detroit, man. It's pretty bad. So plan ahead for the trip to the stadium, let me tell you that.
I got like turned around so many times coming here last night. I drove in from Orchard Park last night, and the last half hour here was the toughest.
It's a challenge now, and they're going to start a third phase on I-75, which you'll see. And that's going to wreck the traffic even more. So.
Oh, man.
No, it's okay, though.
Yeah. So let me say, you've done a ton of stuff since you left the game.
Mm-hmm.
How much do you sit home on a Sunday afternoon? Who do you follow? How do you watch the game?
It's funny that you ask me this, because I'm the type of guy that when I'm done with something, I'm done with something.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's hard for me to get involved when I can't be on the field, you know,
right.
and then it's like I studied Krav Maga for 5 years, and now I have a hip issue and I can't do it, and they want me to come back and do this. I can't do it. It's either all or nothing for me. But do I enjoy watching the game still? I do enjoy it. Am I jealous of the contracts now? Absolutely.
We were talking about 100%. The numbers on our kind. We were missing a couple of zeros.
I bet. Yeah, you know, and I did pretty well, and I saved my money, and I'm okay. You know, I'm not certainly set for life, but I'm in good shape. But at the end of the day, it's good to see the game progressing. It's good to see, you know, New York trying to make the game better for the players and that sort of thing. Now, I know I've heard from guys in my era my good buddy Steve Atwater and I talked, and we all know the Christian Okoye Steve Atwater meeting at the goal line, or at, not the goal line, but the line of scrimmage. Steve Atwater, I don't think, could play the game at safety taking somebody's head off anymore. He would be fined way too much. He'd get kicked out of games. And
yeah, he gets suspended.
Yeah, and you know, it really is a different game. I think still internally in the trenches, it's still a tough game. You know, I mean, it's obviously you're going live, and it's like, you know, you're not going to get cut from the backside anymore. Mm-hmm. And we benefited from that when we played Seve on the D-line. But
sure,
the game is great, but I don't really follow it as much as, you know, people would think. I do follow Buffalo and Denver, just checking in here and there on the smartphones now. You know, as long as the game keeps progressing and things move on and the wealth of the game increases, hopefully that gives a better opportunity for the guys that need it later in life.
If somebody wants to understand how the physicality of the game has changed, go back and look at pictures. Even me, I was covering kicks and stuff, and I was playing wide receiver. Go back and look at the shoulder pads players wore back in the day. They were big. Picture Jack Lambert, the big, flat, square shoulders, and now the shoulder pads for everybody are very tight or tighter fitting.
Uh-huh.
In fact, you go out and watch offensive line play, you have to look real close to see whether they're wearing their pads or whether they've got shells on.
Yeah.
It's that tight of fitting. That's how different the game has been played, and they've legislated that out of the game.
Yeah, you know, they have. And again, that goes to protecting the guys and trying to keep the game. And we got to protect the game, too, with the younger kids coming up, because they're going to be the future of the NFL as well. But to be honest with you, the ferocity of the game has been taken out a lot mm-hmm. compared to when we played. And that's not to say that, hey, we're any better or we're any tougher. You know, we might think we're a little tougher and relative to that era. But, you know, there's some tough guys out there, and they're busting their butts. And it's still a game that can cripple you for life. It really is. And you know, you can make a wrong tackle. You can accidentally come in with your head down, break your neck, and be in a wheelchair like Nick Bonacani's son and other people that have suffered from that. So the ferocity isn't completely out, but they've reduced it and they've protected. You know, this is a funny analogy. I look at this. When I look at my 401k or I look at my investments, right, okay. I go, okay, I'll take this portion of high risk, right? So high risk means you get a better return. The quarterback is in a high-risk position, but he makes all the money. So why did we reduce that risk? You know, that to me is like, well, wait a minute. He's the guy that I have to stop. I got to bring him down. If I accidentally roll on his bad knee and hurt it even more and he can't play, oh, well, sorry, we're in a better position. But you're not trying to hurt anybody purposely. But to me, I just think that, you know, it's gone a little bit different philosophically for me, because I'm an interior D lineman.
Right.
I'm a, you know, want to hit people and that kind of stuff. But at the end of the day, I still think it's a great game. The teams are over $1 billion now, each one.
Yeah.
I mean, what's the cheapest team? The Bills got bought for 1.5. Dallas is worth almost $5 billion.
Yeah.
I mean, I remember when we played Seve, what, the Bills were worth $700 million,
probably,
$600 million.
Yeah.
So it's great, and hopefully everything will be there for our retirements when we decide
right.
to take
I'm
our
sure.
retirements.
Mike Lotus joins us. Bills, former Bills defensive lineman, lives in this area, not too far away from us. I want to hear more about the ferocity of the game.
Sure.
I want to hear some stories
That's
about
an interesting way to put
how
it.
Fierce it was.
Well, it was, and I'll tell you a perfect example. Before they changed the no-cut rule when you're engaged, I played nose guard. I was in a 3-technique or in a 3-4 defense in Buffalo or in a 4-3 in Denver. I still shaded the center. When the one technique or Buffalo, I had to go head up. We call that a zero. If I'm head up with him and he scoots to his left or scoots to his right, I have to mirror that movement. So now I'm engaged with this guy. The guard could come down and double team me and roll me while I'm engaged. So that's worse, right? The ferocity of a guy coming across the middle and getting blown up, where we always call it, oh, he's holding the Coke can. He just got knocked out. You know, when you hold the Coke can like that, you know, guys would, you know, and that energized your team.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, you know, when Leonard Smith would knock somebody, you know, stiff, you know, you're like, there we go. You know, offense gets jacked up, you know, or, you know, somebody runs somebody over and blows somebody up, or Bruce comes in and makes a sweet tackle and arm rips the ball out and slams him down, but it's just in his inertia and his movement, and he gets hurt. Hey, sorry, man, this is the game of football, you know? So
yeah, it's a different atmosphere. It's a different attitude, because when we played, we didn't have to really think about anything we were doing if we were making a tackle. You hit him anywhere, high, low, sideways, top of the helmet, crown of
the
helmet.
Bring him down.
Just get him down and inflict as much punishment as you could. That was part of the game. Now the defenders are – it's not like that. They have to have a mindset going in where they say, okay, what am I allowed to – how am I allowed to hit him? Where I got to – you know, I've got to go in. I can hit him as hard as I can, but I can't hit him to inflict the most – damage
or
to
with
him,
your
you know,
face.
Or with your face or the top of your helmet.
Right.
And so it's, to me, and I'm sure these guys now are probably getting to the point where it's maybe second nature for them now.
Uh-huh.
But for us, it would have been an entirely new skill set to learn.
I think it would have crippled somebody's career that was a hell of a corner or safety, the way the physical guy that played. Because I know when a ball carrier came through, I tried to make a tackle by, you know how you took your picture, Sev, when you bowed your neck, you know? That was a joke back in the day. You did that to tackle. You wanted to have big traps and a big neck and big shoulders like Shane had.
Right.
I mean, he was a beast. And you wanted to drive through them with your face. Now you do that. I mean, I got a picture in my phone where I'm sacking Kerry Collins from the from the Carolina Panthers back in like 98, and my two screws on my helmet are right on the side of his jaw. And I'm like, I laugh because I show that to everybody. I say, this is getting me kicked out of the game and a $40,000 or $30,000 fine or whatever
they're doing. You're sitting down for 4 weeks.
You're 4 weeks, no pay, you know.
Yeah.
And that would change the game because the speed of the game, even today, is probably faster.
It's faster, yeah.
But you had no time to think. It was react, get off the block, and go to the ball. You know, you had no time to think. Now they have to think. So that changes the tempo.
Mike Lotish joins us. Bill's 10th round pick out of UCLA in 1990. And you came to a Buffalo team that was, let's face it, they were loaded. Now, they needed you because they had Jeff Wright right in front of you and Freddie Smirnoff left.
Well, Freddie left. He went to San Francisco, and Jeff took over the starting position. And when I came in, they drafted a guy named Fred Dirigi in the 7th round from Syracuse, if you remember that
name. I do not remember that name.
And well, he didn't last very long, thanks to me. But all right, no pat on the back. But then they had Darrell Marshall, who's a gentleman out of USC. I played against Darrell. He's a big, wide body, you know, for a 3-4. I can't believe I made it because a 3-4, 275-pound nose tackle is no longer ever. You know?
They're 350. They're 375
pounds, that's it,
right?
You know. And so at the end of the day, I came in to the Bickering Bills. I remember my first mini camp. We went up to the press box. That's where we held it. And I remember Marv talking about Vic Carucci, and Vic was writing some stuff about, I don't know. And I didn't know anything about the Howard Ballard thing with Jim and all that. And I was like, oh, my God. And then I called it the Bermuda Triangle. And I love these guys to death because I went to war with them. But it was Thurman over here. Then there was the hallway. And then Bruce. And I was next to Bruce. And Cornelius was up there. So I called it the Bermuda Triangle. They would go at it. And then you had Daryl next to me, Rodney Dangerfield. He got no respect, you know. But it was a character. They had 6 Hall of Fame? Well, you're going to be number 7.
They had 5 players on the team that were Hall of Famers.
Yeah, you're
going to
be number 6. So and it's coming. Don't worry.
It was James, Bruce, Thurman, Andre, Jim.
That's right.
And all of those guys were,
I mean, stellar players.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, here I am fighting at third team, and I got Chuck Dickerson. We all remember the coach. I don't even know if Chuck's alive or what's he doing now. I'd love to know. But he really gave me an opportunity, and really Bruce, going back to UCLA, I played a 3-4 and I played a 5 technique at UCLA. And when Bruce went down, remember he had the knee and he didn't play? They gave me the starting position for the first preseason game against the Giants in 1990. And I made 2 tackles for no gain. And, of course, Ralph Wilson wore that blue suit with the red tie all the time, right? And he came down and he called me Brother Rice because that's the high school I went to because he's from Grosse Pointe.
Okay, right.
And he'd go, Brother Rice, nice job on those 2 tackles. And I'm sitting there going, oh, my God, the owner of the team. You know, I'm not supposed to make that, you know. So things just fell into place and it worked out. And I was able to do what we call it, whatever you can do, right? I can play 5. I can play nose. I can.
Yeah, let's talk about that. I mean, we're sitting here in the middle of this big discussion about the preseason and how, you know, we're poo-pooing it as it's, you know, nobody play that, that I on it. So many things wrong with
it.
It's
so much different.
It's different. But for you, you remember those preseason games with.
That was my season.
Right.
That was how I was making the team, period.
Yeah, and you did it a bunch
every
of
year,
times.
Every year I had to do it. They were always looking to get rid of me. I was the 10th round undersized kid that, you know, let's get rid of them. And I did everything in my power to have them look on the board in the war room and go, we just can't cut them. We just, mm-hmm. we got to have them. And so that was the, you know, my motor and where I lacked maybe some fluidity with my body movement like Bruce has. I had some strength. I had some brains. I did right. everything in my power and, you know, listen to the call. If I can hear something, I'm on it, you know. Right. Don't let me hear the snap count, you know.
Right.
But today I'm seeing all these teams, they're sitting their starters, like 30 guys. They're not playing. Yeah. That would never, ever happen. In the beginning, you would play more in the preseason as a backup, and as the preseason went along, you'd play a little bit less until the last game. Mm-hmm. And then they'd probably – give you the half, but
right.
I remember you guys, the starters on offense, and just remembering this, and defense, first series, first game, second game, first quarter, maybe quarter and a half, mm-hmm. you know, third game, full half, and maybe into the third quarter and pull them, mm-hmm. you know, and now they're just, you know, I'm assuming it's for injury sake or yeah. for potential right. injury issues because the salaries are off the charts now, you right. know, I mean, a free agent doesn't get a signing bonus, makes all 17 weeks, is almost 500 grand. Mm-hmm. I mean, God bless him. Good for you. You
yeah, know? That's a rookie free agent.
That's a rookie undrafted right. free agent. Yeah, right. I mean, that's impressive, you know. Yeah,
and it's the game has evolved a long way, both on the field and, you know, in the locker rooms and, you know, what they're expected to do. And what when you look back, what do you remember about your six Super Bowls?
Well,
about, you know, if we've talked about the preseason,
I'll tell you
this.
You know, I have a very big place in my heart for the Buffalo Bills, okay? Mm-hmm. I played more with the Broncos, but Chuck Dickerson and Walt Corey and Marv and Bill Polian, and they gave me an opportunity in the league. And so I take my hat off. And to have played on teams alongside of you and John, you were there. We went to four Super Bowls in a row, and everybody says, well, you didn't win one. I take more grief for that. I'm sure you have as well. But the power that team had was amazing. I mean, but I also – the power of that team was also its demise, I think. They were mm-hmm. too good. We were too good, and we had attitude, and we had ego, and mm-hmm. we couldn't keep the ego in check. And we all had it, you know, everybody, even you, the nicest guy, and you and Kelso, even Kelso had a little attitude, and he's the nicest guy in the world, you know. But it was
– We were rock stars, Murph.
We were, and we were in a small town. We were in the, smallest market in the NFL,
yeah,
maybe?
One of, yeah.
I mean, so to me – the benefit of playing with the Buffalo Bills is an absolute blessing. And the 12th man was a blessing. And I'm going to say one story. Miami Dolphins came into town in December, and I about just fell apart watching the snowballs go to the buses, getting pegged when I'm driving into the stadium. I'm like, only in Buffalo would this happen, you know? I mean, it was awesome.
What was different in Denver and winning those two Super Bowls? Was
well, you know.
Less ego involved?
I don't want to be a guy to point fingers, right? But I think I'm a good guy to ask that question because I've been on both sides yeah. of the seesaw, mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. I personally think that the challenges that we had with our ego is really what set us apart. You know, the five hall, you know, we all saw the 30 for 30, right? Mm-hmm. And they put it on the table, and so did you, Steve. We were immature. We thought our S didn't stink, you know? We thought that we could go into the Super Bowl and have four overnights, the first four overnights with no curfew, and we had some dudes, and I was one of them. We liked to drink. We liked to go out and have a good time. We liked to, you know, and maybe we were.
Yeah, what's the use of going to the Super Bowl if you can't have fun, right?
Right. Well, there's a flip side to that coin, right? There's the business end. So you asked, John, what's the difference? I think it was our mistake to allow us to have that much free time because we should have been sequestered. We should have been tunnel vision focused. We have one goal here to win this game. And then after the game, we're going to light it up. Okay. Mm-hmm. And that's what Mike Shanahan said to us. He said, guess what? You know how many nights you're going out? None. 11 o'clock curfew. The only night he gave us off was Sunday night. No one's there, you know, nothing's going on. We were a little bit more in the locker room. We had better chemistry amongst the guys. And I don't want to say that because, you know, I love you like a brother, Steve. You know, there wasn't a lot of camaraderie with the guys. There was more finger pointing, it seemed like. And we saw the 30 for 30, so I'm not putting out anything that would mm-hmm. sell anybody out or anything. I'm not going to name names or any of that. But we all know who the guys are. And when your leadership in your locker room is not doing what they need to do off the field and in the locker room, on the field, those guys performed. You know, clearly, we went to four Super Bowls. But there has to be, you know what I'm saying. You, right. You said that on the 30 yeah, for 30
the,
as well.
The chemistry of all the great teams seems to be a constant.
It is.
And it was a big part of that team, why it was successful, and ultimately you're saying, too, it was just a little bit short, fell short of mm-hmm. what it needed to be done. Mm-hmm. This Buffalo Bills staff has gone – made wide-reaching efforts to make this a really close-knit group. In fact, that's what everybody – we have all these guys on here that said, you know, that's been the difference in this team from any team they've been on, is the fact that it's a very close-knit group. Now, my question is, this seems a concerted effort to do that. Mm-hmm. And the teams that I've seen at other places, it's been kind of organic. Mm-hmm. You know what I'm saying?
Yes.
They did it because it clicked. Mm-hmm. Do you think it can be done both ways?
I think anything's possible, right? I mean, it starts at the leadership. And everybody says, since I'm in Detroit, what's wrong with the Detroit Lions? This is a sort of an analogy comparison, mm-hmm. right? And I don't want to be the guy to point the finger at the Ford family, but I played for two owners that basically said to me, to my face, we don't want to get there. We want to win the Super Bowl. And it starts at the apex, right? So Coach McDermott, I believe that's his last name, right? Coach McDermott, it starts with you. You're the apex. You have to create the community, if you will. You have
environment.
To environment. You have to create the environment, and you have to demand it with rules and regulations. And if you violate those, it's not tolerable, whether you're the top dog mm-hmm. or you're the backup D tackle like me. The rules have to be the same for everybody, and no one gets a free pass because you're Jim Kelly or you're Bruce Smith or you're Thurman Thomas. That's absolute caca, mm-hmm. you know. And I met him, and he seems like he's got his head on his shoulders, and I watched the guys
McDermott or Brandon Bean? Or
Coach McDermott. McDermott. I just met him over there because I thought you guys were over there where the team is. And I said, introduced myself to a couple guys, and I'm trying to pillage a Buffalo Bills T-shirt from the equipment guys. So, it might fit me, John. I'm a little bigger than I was when I played, but I think it can be done, Steve. I just think in order to get there, you have to be, as a football player and a teammate, you have to be a teammate. You know, you're already a football player, but how good are you as a teammate? Like, hey, Sevy, don't worry about that missed tackle and he ran to the house. Forget about it, dude. We love you. You're going to get out there. You're one of the best. Coming from a guy that doesn't even know, we love you, man.
Right.
We didn't have a lot of that in mm-hmm. when guys, you know, they were finger pointing.
Yeah.
And that's a problem. And that will permeate. That's cancer, right? It'll spread. And people will get attitude. And people will be angry and resentful to that person. And almost be like, give you the bird and in your mind, you know. And like, that's bad.
Yeah. Football is, I think, that spreads faster than any other sport because you're asking guys to physically go through some discomfort for each other.
That's right.
And that's hard to ask. And that's why the
but
league.
But that's a team, Seth.
That's right.
That's right. The great. You look at all the great teams that have won the Super Bowl. I guarantee you, like New England, Tom Brady. I mean, Tom Brady doesn't go to 9 Super Bowls without Belichick. That's what I believe. Does Belichick go to the Super Bowl without Tom Brady? Yeah, but I don't think 9 times, you know. Mm-hmm. So that combination is great. But when you saw them at the Kentucky Derby, he rented a plane. He brought all the team, brought his boys. I mean, they're just – Bob Kraft put that, you know, just like Pat Bolin did, you know. And Ralph wasn't really in tune. He let Bill Polian and mm-hmm. Marv run the whole show there. And we had a great run for six, 7 years, a couple years before I got there, and then the 4 years I was there. Mm-hmm. But it's possible, but it has to start at the top. And the Detroit team, it's not starting at the top. And look, Tampa Bay can go to a Super Bowl and win. Bob Kraft bought the New England Patriots. We used to go to Foxborough and mop them up. It was a guaranteed win. Mm-hmm. You know, things can change if the management and upper echelon wants it to be done.
Right. Mike Lotish played in 4 Super Bowls with the Bills, 1-2 with Denver. Does the joy and exhilaration of those 2 Super Bowl victories make up for the disappointment of losing four?
Absolutely does.
I'm glad to hear that.
It really does. I mean, and especially to go back to back to be part of that and to be part of back to back to back to back losses, you're still part of a historical situation, you know, and you try to look at it like the glass is half full. And sure, you know, everybody says, oh, Scotty Norwood. And I get on people, I go, don't you ever blame Scotty Norwood, because right. we could blame Thurman for not cutting into the middle of the field. Right. We could blame the defense for being on the field for 13 minutes in the third quarter and giving mm-hmm. Hostetler all that time. Mm-hmm. I mean, we can. Sure. There's the finger pointing again, you know. Yeah. No, you're a teammate. You grab them and you hug them just like Daryl did and everybody right. did in that first one. And that kind of stuff.
And I said, talk about this. If we win, if that kick goes through, we don't go to three more.
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know if we, you might. Your team might break up because, you know, you didn't have free agency. You know, you had the plan right. B, I think, right. or whatever it was. And you could protect so many guys, but then other guys could go out and, you know, right. check out other deals. But, you know, I look forward to, you know, I like the start of the season, but the middle of the season's kind of tough. You know, I like watching football during the playoffs.
Yeah.
That's the funnest time for me as a retired guy.
When we were the break before, you were looking at my spotting board for tonight's game. You did a little broadcast work, you said, right?
I did. I did a little broadcast work. I was a color analyst for Fox. We all try to get out of football and whatever sports. And, Sev, you've done a great job, man, with CBS. It's great to see on TV. And, you know, it's a lot harder than you actually think, because you literally have someone talking in your ear, like I heard them talking when you were reading that stuff. Yeah. And that used to derail me. And it was hard.
It was,
you know?
The first thing you do is listen.
Yeah, you stop
shut
talking.
Up and start listening.
Right.
Yeah.
And they're like, stop using outstanding. Stop. You're using it too many times. Okay. I got to come up with a different word, yeah. you know. So, but it was fun. I did it for a couple of years and I got a chance to go to Europe, but it wasn't for me.
Last time we talked to you a couple of years ago on our show,
yep.
you had a business and successful business selling peanut brittle.
Well,
it was a great idea.
It was a great
idea. We never got a sample, by the way.
I know. I'm sorry about that. It lasted 5 years and I had to put it down. We made money. It was a $16,000 investment and I closed out at about 80 grand in the account.
Excellent.
So I made money. It was sweat equity that paid me back. But I learned a lot. I learned how to run a business, do the sales, do the marketing, find the place to cook it. But ultimately, peanut brittle is a seasonal thing. And frankly, I did okay playing football, but I needed cash flow. So I needed to go to work 9 to 5.
And what are you doing?
So I work for a company called Midland Tool and
Supply.
Yeah, there you go. This is my lunch break here, so I'm getting back out
Perfect.
On the road. So thanks for having me. But I sell industrial and construction tools.
Excellent.
So personal protection stuff, safety, all safety, all, you know, Milwaukee, DeWalt, Metabo, Makita, all that stuff. And I'm doing the I-75 project with Walsh Toby. So, you know, I've done several hundred thousand dollars with them in the last 3 months. So it's a great job for an ex-football player, because I'm dealing with all these construction superintendents and they love football. So the bonding of being in sales is really, it's all about the relationship, John and Steve,
right.
you know that, right? So if they trust you and you get them their stuff on time and it's right, they're going to stay with you. They're very loyal. So I've managed to really develop some good relationships with the big construction companies in Detroit. And I'm making more money now than I did my first year in the league. So I'm okay.
That's great.
Everything's good. You know?
So am I.
And I got to fit.
It's not really a high bar.
Just to tell everybody, I made $65,000 salary in 1990 and $11,000 signing bonus. So just goes to show you the minimum at 500 now for these undrafted free agents it's amazing.
You know what, though? I'm good for them.
Good
for them.
I'm not hating.
No,
I'm not
I don't hate them
I don't
either.
Hate the
I'm
game
like, good
either.
Good for them.
Good for them, because I know I made 25-40% more than the guys 20 years before me.
Yeah,
so
exactly.
it's the way it is.
It's great you're doing well. It's great
thanks.
To catch up
yeah,
with you,
Yeah, it's really good
thank
to see
you
guys.
Great seeing you, man.
Thanks
for stopping by.
And thanks, Buffalo. I appreciate the 5 years, and you guys, the 12th man, you're the best. See ya.
Thanks. Mike Lodish played with the Bills in the Super Bowl run, joining us here in Detroit. Steve and I coming back with more. One Bills Live. This is Buffalo Bills Radio. Welcome back. John Murphy, Steve Tasker back in our hotel location, the Detroit Marriott in Troy, Michigan. We're on Big Beaver Road in Detroit, Michigan. Mike Lodish lives right around the corner in Bloomington, Michigan. Did he say Bloomington? Is that what it is? Bloomington? What is it? Birmingham, Michigan. I'll tell you the truth. I enjoyed that as much as any interview we've done in a long time.
Yeah.
And he's got great vivid memories of your Super Bowl era, mm-hmm. and he's got opinions. That was about as good as it gets. Mike Bodish was great.
And his experience as a pro football player is unparalleled because of his, you know, his experience in the big game, winning it and losing it. And the differences between the teams that won it, the teams that didn't win it, his experiences with, you know, since he's played in the NFL and the reactions he gets to the teams that he was on.
His road to the NFL, and he admitted it. You know, he's a 10th round pick. He probably didn't belong on a Super Bowl roster, but there he was with the Bills 4 years in a row.
Yeah, I mean, he was, I think they had, let's see, 90, they must have had 11 or 12 rounds then. And he was a 10th round pick, probably
12 rounds back then.
Probably 250th player picked or something like that, and came to Buffalo, who had been, who was about to go to its first Super Bowl.
Yeah, first year.
First year.
What did you make of his comparison between the atmosphere on your Super Bowl teams and the atmosphere of the Super Bowl winners in Denver?
Yeah, because one of the things I think about when I think about that team is how close knit they were and here. Are now.
Here, Buffalo.
Here in
your
Buffalo.
Teams, yeah.
And I knew, too, that in that Denver locker room, I figured most teams will tell you who have success. Like, they're really close-knit. And he noticed some things about their team that were a little different than the Buffalo team. You know, we still probably had some residue in his mind about the bickering Bills because he got here just as that was done.
Over, yeah.
And so there was, you know, probably some of that still lingering or some guys from that. But, yeah, his recollection of the team was – particularly because he had it to contrast with the Denver teams that he was on, was probably different than a lot of guys had.
And I thought I was fascinated by, and he brought it up, the ferocity of the game back then when
he played.
It
was a great way to put it. I'm glad he said that. The ferocity is different, I think. It's a you can't just fly around and hit people however you can hit them, you know. And there really was a level of play when I played all through my career where if you were going to tackle a guy and you had a chance, you could hit him as hard as you wanted with whatever part of your body that would inflict the most damage on him. And that's what guys did. That was the way you did it. And and I mentioned it in our interview, the equipment has changed because of that. You know, I look back and there's football cards with me. I got shoulder pads the size of this table, you know?
Yeah.
And it was protection for me hitting people. You know, not for them. It was for me. And the game has changed. Now you get guys that the shoulder pads are, you know, hardly noticeable sometimes.
Did you enjoy that as much
that
as I did?
Great,
are you sure?
I like
I could have kept going, but.
I like him a lot.
Yeah.
I liked him as a player.
I forgot how smart he is.
Too,
he's so smart.
I knew, too. That's one of the things I always, you know, you heard me say it. The guy's got a level of intelligence that's unique. And he's right. And I think one of the things that his life has been guided by, I'm just saying that, he is all in whatever he's doing. And he said, you know, I stopped that business because I want to do something else. He goes, I got to be all in. I can't have this and that and the other thing going. He goes, I was all in. He was all in the Bills. He was all in. And then when he went to Denver, he's all in. And then the things that he did after that, he's always all in everything he does. And I think that's one of the reasons he's been a success.
This word sounds like Jim Rome, but I'm going to say it. That was great. That was great. What a great segment that was.
It really was.
What a guest.
Great to touch base.
Mike Lotish was great.
He's dabbled in a lot of things. Yeah. You know, he's making candy and stuff. You know? And he was a
Peanut
player.
Frittle.
He handled players' agents.
Talk about all in. When we had him on the show, it must have been 3 years ago now, and he got talking about his peanut brittle business back then. He was all into peanut brittle. Remember this, Jay Harris, our producer? He was all about peanut brittle, how to get the best peanut brittle, what to do with it, how to eat peanut brittle. I mean, he is.
He has the ability to focus.
Yeah.
And he's good at life.
Yeah.
You know?
That
really
was great.
Is.
That was great. We got to get back. We got to get back on track, and we will. We're going to talk about who you're looking for tonight. What are you looking for tonight? And what do we do about preseason? Phone lines open. We'll take some of those calls when we come back. John Murphy, Steve Tasker, One Bills Live, presented by Kalata Health from the Detroit Marriott in Troy, Michigan, and this is Buffalo Bills Radio. Back, John Murphy, Steve Tasker. It's One Bills Live presented by Kalata Health. We're at the Detroit Marriott in Troy, Michigan, right up the road from Detroit. And Lotish mentioned it about the construction zones out here, I-75. Did you get hung up in that last night? How did I get mixed up in that?
We had a police escort, and they were moving people aside, and we drove straight in.
For you and Jay?
Yeah.
Baloney, you did not.
What? Yeah, didn't we? Yeah, yeah. They had lights flashing and everything.
Baloney.
Maybe they weren't escorting us. Were they chasing us? They were chasing us? Yeah,
the roads are all torn up, and Lotus is part of it.
We didn't run through any of that. What are you talking about?
I must have got bad directions. Anyway, we got Bills, Lions, 8 o'clock tonight. We want to know from you, what are you looking for in tonight's third preseason game? Give us a call to discuss, 803-0550, toll-free, 1-888-550-2550. Send in a tweet. We might read it on the tweet sheet. The tweet sheet is brought to you by Corrigan Moving Systems, the official movers of the Buffalo Bills. From the tweet sheet, from Tony. Tony's looking for efficient Josh Allen and a very early exit, continued strong play from the rookies, particularly Singletary, Ford, Bam Johnson, and Tommy Sweeney. I'll take all of that, all of that. Continued efficient Josh Allen play. I don't care if he goes deep. I don't care if he finds Foster or anybody, John Brown deep. Efficient. I want to see efficiency. I know he's got the capability to go deep.
Here's the thing. I mean,
what's the thing?
We're trying to
be, tell me what's
getting
the
all
thing
specific. The thing is, listen, we all want to see the team get really a whole lot better and come out completely healthy. There you go. Right? We want to see everybody have wild success.
I want it all.
Unbridled success on every level and then get out of it completely healthy.
Yes.
I mean, there you go.
And I throw in a pony, too. I want a pony.
Exactly. A unicorn.
I want it
Not
all.
Just a pony. So there you go.
All right. Can I do one more from the tweet sheet?
All right,
or
go
are you going to dismiss that one,
no,
too?
No, go ahead.
From Jeremiah, I'd like to see more of Josh Allen in the ones, but I also really want to see Sills, Easley, Knox, and Duke. He says Duke. That's okay. You can't really have both. A lot of play by the ones and get all those guys in. David Sills has not, you know, made his mark yet. Steve, an undrafted rookie free agent from West Virginia.
Right.
Easley, I thought, had good moments in training camp the first week or two. Hasn't done much in a game. Duke Williams, on the other hand, I think has an opportunity here to open the wide receiver question a little bit more, a little wider than it was going into last week's game.
He certainly didn't disappoint last week. I mean, last week was his first extended opportunity to play. He made the most of it. Touchdown, blocked well in the run game, couple of real good catches across the middle in traffic, squeezed the ball tight and turned it upfield. He looked good. He looked like a four-year pro. And he's, you know, even though he's a rookie in the NFL, the guy's been playing on his own for a while now, and he's ready to do it. So he's that's what he looked like, and we'll see if he can. I'd like to know what their thought are. Do they need to see more? Has he not been consistent in practice? Has he been down in practice, and then he gets in the game and flourishes? Is that the kind of player he is? It'll be interesting to see what they think they need to see from him.
Let's get to the phones for a minute or two. Ask what you're looking for from tonight's game. Paul in Kenmore on the line. Paul, what do you think? What are you looking to see in tonight's third preseason game?
Hey, guys. First of all, I think my point is going to be kind of mute now. What an amazing interview with Mike Lotish. The fact that he was just a Buffalo guy, earned everything he ever, you know, had to, always played hard. I know Buffalo fans love him, and that was just amazing. It also surprised me how many old NFL players still actually have jobs after the NFL. He's doing sales. I know a bunch of other players are also working, which surprised me because athletes these days, there's no way they're working after the NFL, NBA, whatever. But again, what an amazing.
Well, so when did that change?
Here's the thing, Paul. Here's the thing. The guys, like I'm doing this. I mean, and I certainly
wish you weren't.
I've been working for 20 years since I gave it up, and I got a really nice. I had a really nice career, good career. It's different now, certainly, but a lot of think about it. I retired when I was 35. You got to do something.
Yeah,
you know, most of these guys have something they want to get into. So even if they don't need the paycheck, they certainly want to try and do something. So there's that.
And then for tonight's game, I was wondering your guys' thoughts on Isaiah McKenzie. I really liked the way the Bills used him last year. Where do you think he is? Obviously, he's on the bubble, but do you think he's more in or more out right now?
That's a really good question. I mean, he's – you know, it's crowded there, Steve, and we're talking again. Here we are again talking about fifth, sixth wide receiver, right? Brown, Foster, Andre Roberts, Zay Jones, Beasley. That's five. So now you got Duke Williams, Isaiah McKenzie, Ray McLeod, maybe one of those three, maybe? What do you think?
Yeah, somebody. I think there may be behind Beasley, Brown, Zay Jones, and I think they like Isaiah Roberts, no question about it.
Andre
Roberts. So there's four. They can go possibly, what, six at the most? Because then you're starting to take, if you go six wide receivers, you might only go four tight ends and four running backs. That's when you're starting to get into numbers at the bottoms of the others. Now, will you get more out of the wide receiver position on offense rather than extra tight end? Does that give you more flexibility, particularly if you keep DeMarco as a running back who could line up as a wing like a tight end? So there's all that stuff in the mix there. But that's, you know, you're talking about two spots tops between, what, four guys that you're thinking about hanging on to? And what can they give you on special teams? And Isaiah McKenzie seems to me like Andre Roberts. You know, they seem like the same guy to me.
One more call. This portion of the show will go to Alex in Rochester. We were talking about the efficacy of preseason football. Alex, do you have a thought on that?
Yes, thanks for taking my call. I wanted to call in because
sure.
I don't think you had anyone mention yesterday that to have no preseason games played. I think instead of playing two, they should substitute the two games for 2 weeks of joint practices with two different teams. And this way, since there's actually less games being played, then we could have an 18-game schedule. I think that would be awesome. It'd be a lot more exciting for the fans. And one thing that nobody's mentioned with the 18-game schedule is it would also help with tiebreakers at the end of the season for who makes the playoffs, because I hate seeing 3 9-7 teams and only one of them can make the playoffs or something like that. So thanks for taking my call, and I'll be happy to hear what you guys got to say. Thanks.
Okay. Thanks, Alex.
Yeah, makes sense. I mean, I get it. That would be that's a big move to take away the preseason entirely. I think that's bold. That's a bold move, and you could have, you know, there's a couple of reasons why I don't think your proposition would work. One, the Players Association would not go for an 18-game schedule. Two, the owners would not go for giving up 4 weeks, four games of revenue that they don't have to share with anybody. That's two top reasons.
There's a million more.
I don't know that they even need to go past, you know,
yeah,
to the other 998,000 of them. But those two right there would stop it from happening.
We're going to talk more about this. Chris Brown getting set to join us. He follows what's going on around the league, and he knows what's going on around with the Bills. And Chris Brown, Bills Insider from BuffaloBills.com, standing by to join us when we come back. You can still phone in your ideas or send in your tweets to the tweet sheet, or give us a call at 803-0550 or toll-free 1-888-550-2550. Chris Brown, when we come back, One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health from the Marriott Hotel in Troy, Michigan. This is Buffalo Bills Radio.